is Chadha v. Mukasey. Ms. Sabata? Oh, you're not Ms. Sabata. Who are you?
Eric Ha.
Okay, sorry. It's, our card says Margaret Sabata. So anyway, Mr. Ha, go ahead.
May it please the Court, Eric Ha and Margaret Sabata for the petitioner Adil Hassan Chadha.
That's Margaret.
Right, yes. There.
Okay, so we got the wrong name on the card.
Yes. The IJ's decision in this case should be reversed for two reasons. First and foremost, the IJ's decision was based on a clearly erroneous credibility determination. Second,
I'd like to ask a question. I'm confused about one thing here, and that is that this immigrant was headed for Canada. He eventually was seeking refuge in Canada. And he is being questioned for an airport interview at O'Hare when he's en route. But at that point, he wasn't seeking a refuge in the United States, I don't think. And I think that has some impact on how we interpret his answers to these questions that were put to him at the airport interview. Can you explain? Probably ought to be asking this question of the other side, but can you explain to me what the relationship is of this interview at O'Hare to his eventual intention to go to Canada?
Let me add to that question. I thought he said he was a student going to Canada, not that he was going there to seek any sort of refuge.
Well, initially at the airport interview, he did state that he was seeking to go to Canada to study.
I can't hear you.
Initially, that was his answer, was that he was going to Canada to study at the airport interview. But I think these questions raise immediately the problem and the error that the IJ committed in relying on these airport interviews. What becomes clear on the record and based on the petitioner's testimony is that ultimately he was seeking asylum somewhere. He testified at his hearing that in reality he was seeking to go to Canada ultimately for asylum, and he's seeking asylum protection as he's been being detained here in the United States.
Well, why wouldn't that be a rational basis for at least questioning his credibility? He said, I'm en route to Canada, I'm a student, and never mentions anything about political asylum or anything of that nature.
No, I think the most problematic part of the IJ's credibility determination is his reliance on these airport interviews, and that the IJ failed to consider and adequately assess the reliability of the airport interviews. He failed to consider any of the surrounding circumstances that are...
Well, if he's headed for Canada, maybe he just decided that he didn't want to tell the U.S. immigration people all of this stuff that happened in Pakistan.
Well, I think
he wasn't going to stay in the United States.
I think that's a perfectly fair explanation for why he didn't go into all of that. In addition, the IJ didn't consider the petitioner's...
Well, that's your side. I'm not asking you for an answer.
I agree with you, Judge. And I think in addition to that...
I just don't understand how all this system works mechanically. I don't understand the purpose of the interview in O'Hare and so on.
I agree with you completely, Judge. And in addition to the explanations that you just gave, the IJ failed to consider the really traumatic circumstances that the petitioner was in at the time.
Yeah, but they're so implausible, right? Also, what I don't understand is, and I don't understand the government, the government's not arguing this, but if a person can be removed to a part of the country that he came from where he wouldn't be in danger, then he's not entitled to asylum. So Pakistan is a huge country. It's mostly Sunni. So there are many places, presumably, where he could go and live in Pakistan without worrying about this Shiite family in one little place.
Well, I think there are two responses to your concern.
Chadha family that... the persecuting family, their writ doesn't run all through Pakistan, does it?
Well, I think there are two responses. The first, which you alluded to, is that neither the government nor the IJ based the denial of asylum on that ground. In addition, if you look at the petitioner's testimony...
I thought it was mentioned by the immigration judge or by the board. No? Wasn't mentioned at all?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
And even if it was, there's evidence in the record and in the petitioner's testimony that he does, in fact, have a countrywide fear of the Shia Chadas. The petitioner testified that his two brothers were tracked by the Shia Chadas individually and in connection with the local police to a village over 9 hours away. The petitioner testified that the Shia Chadas have political connections throughout the country, and the country conditions report document extensively that intersectarian violence is simply a reality between all of the Sunni subsects, Muslim subsects in Pakistan. And so even if that was a basis that the IJ grounded his decision in, it's simply not supported by the evidence in the record.
Okay, thank you.
The IJ, again, also failed to consider relevant probative evidence in the record that go centrally to the petitioner's credibility and claim for asylum. For example, despite certifying Dr. Jean Leotaud as an expert in child psychology, the IJ completely ignored her testimony regarding the mental trauma that the petitioner suffered as a result of the persecution by the Shia Chadas. In addition, the IJ ignored record evidence, as I mentioned earlier, that directly contradict his own speculation and conjecture regarding country conditions in Pakistan. Again, going back to the previous question about the airport interview, there were also significant facts in the record that, again, the IJ wholly ignored. The IJ gave lip service to the factors that this court articulated in Balogun, but even the government concedes that those factors are not exclusive. The IJ wholly failed to consider, for example, that the petitioner was a 16-year-old child at the time of these interviews, that in the weeks immediately prior to the interview, the petitioner was repeatedly beaten to unconsciousness. He witnessed the brutal rape of his sister. He was forced to flee his own home under gunfire. And coming from a feudal tribal village in Pakistan, he found himself at O'Hare Airport, en route to Canada, being questioned by immigration officials that he testified scared him. And any obvious, any reasonable person, I think, looking at these circumstances would understand how a 16-year-old child in that situation would be frightened and would be terrified of being questioned. The petitioner testified that the immigration officials asked him without any basis about his ties to terrorism and Osama bin Laden. In addition, the IJ ignored the petitioner's testimony that the immigration officials scared him because of his prior dealings with corrupt police in his native village of Jamwala. Had the IJ considered these circumstances, as the law required him to do, he would have been compelled to find the interview unreliable and an improper basis for finding the petitioner not credible. Having failed to do so, the IJ's adverse credibility determination is clearly erroneous. In addition to improperly finding the petitioner not credible, the IJ's findings with respect to the merits of the petitioner's asylum claim are also not supported by substantial evidence. As I mentioned earlier, the countrywide fear of persecution wasn't the basis on which the IJ ultimately denied asylum. The IJ denied asylum relief on the basis of two findings that have no basis in the record. First, the IJ found that the petitioner had failed to demonstrate that the government was unable or unwilling to protect him from persecution. This is simply not true, and is directly contradicted by both the documentary and testimonial evidence in the record. The record is replete with evidence that the police in Pakistan are corrupt and that they can be subject to the control of powerful individuals like the Shia Chadas.
His family still live there? In this village?
Certain of his family members are still there.
They still are living in that village, and they're not, or at least there's no evidence that they're...
Well, the petitioner actually testified in his affidavit and at the hearing that the remaining family members have continued to get threats from the Shia Chadas. In addition, his two brothers have not been able to return to the village for fear of further persecution.
Is there some because the last names are the same. His name is Chada, and there's he's a Sunni Chada, and then there's the
The Shia Chavez. There's absolutely no relation between the two families. If there are no further questions now, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Ha. Mr. Dupree?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Tom Dupree on behalf of the United States. This Court should deny the petition for review on either of two grounds.
It's a little puzzling that, given that this seems to be some little village feud, that you haven't argued that he can be deported and removed to another part of Pakistan?
Well, Judge Posner, typically the
that was one of your favorite arguments for a long time.
It is one that the government makes with some frequency. I think typically, though, that analysis occurs at about the fourth or fifth stage of a case. In other words, in cases in which
the plaintiff is... If the alien had a well-founded fear of persecution if he was sent to X, you could argue, well, but he could live in Y and he wouldn't have that. That's
exactly right.
Okay.
And in this case, I think the reason why that wasn't pressed, as it is in other cases, because we have powerful arguments, I think, on our first few points, namely adverse credibility and the alien's failure to satisfy the burden of proof in this case. I would note, though, in passing, Judge Posner, you had asked whether the IJ made any reference to that point. And on page 15 of the IJ's decision, the IJ specifically questions, quote, the power of his alleged Shia persecutors to reach beyond his village to national political parties and to local police forces. So your recollection was exactly right. The IJ did address that, although, of course, that finding was not rendered in the context of the government pressing that argument, to be fair. I'd like to begin with the credibility point. In this case, there are clear credibility problems. I think the IJ's conclusions were reasonable to focus on the manifest discrepancies between the petitioners.
Well, a statistical discussion about what the State Department said, the Sunni, the Shia balance and all that. Why does that apply to this small village where there's apparently a dominant family? It seemed to me that it involved assumptions which were pretty inappropriate to make.
Well, I think the IJ reasonably looked at a number of different reports, many of which were from the State Department, to say that there's simply no evidence in the record that of the minority Shia persecuting the majority Sunni, let alone that the Shia would have such power that they could control the police force and essentially, as the petitioner claims in this case, frame him for crimes. So I think the IJ, quite reasonably, and particularly in the absence of any contrary evidence, looked at the overall context of situations in Pakistan and says, this claim on its face strikes me as implausible. And of course, the petitioner himself didn't furnish any reports which would support his view. To be sure, he did solicit letters from people in the village, all of which were vague in the extreme, none of which testified either to the dynamics within the village, let alone the actual incident that the plaintiff caused him to flee from Pakistan. So to answer your question, Your Honor, I believe that the IJ quite reasonably and permissibly simply took note of the overall dynamics in Pakistan and said there's nothing in this case.
I think there was a real question how reasonable the deduction as to this village from the gross statistics of Pakistan might be.
Well, of course, the IJ's finding, I think, can be upheld solely.
A lot of exceptions to a lot of rules in a lot of countries. So.
Well, of course, the IJ's conclusion, I think, was based on a number of things, one of which, of course, was the airport.
How about addressing this thing about he was destined to go to Canada and he's being questioned in O'Hare? How does that work?
Well, I think the easiest way for this court to address that issue, Your Honor, is simply to note that that's not the argument the petitioner is making. In other words,
I don't care about that. I'm interested in getting an answer to it.
Well, I don't know why he didn't say the reasons he gave the answers he did was because he was seeking to go to Canada.
It seems to me that if he wasn't seeking asylum in the United States, he's seeking it in Canada. That might affect the kind of answers he'd give to the American immigration people.
But, again, number one, he's not saying that. Number two, his argument that he did make was either that he had been coerced by the American officials.
Well, I know that, but I'm asking you, I'd like to know what the procedure is here. Why are the U.S. immigration people questioning him about when they know he's going on to Canada. He says he's going on to Canada.
Well, I think Your Honor highlighted, he says he's going on to Canada, but I would submit that when an alien gets off the plane at O'Hare from a foreign country and comes into the United States, even if his intent, as he avows, is only to walk around the O'Hare concourse and then to board the flight for Canada, that at that point the immigration officials are well within their rights to question him.
Did he have a ticket?
Did he have a ticket? The procedure
he said to the immigration officials that he was going on a connecting flight. I'm not aware of the ticket appearing in the record. I'm not aware that he furnished that ticket at the removal hearing, because I noted to Judge Cuddy he's abandoned that point. That said, he did claim that he was going on a connecting flight. Uh-huh. On the other hand, he also said that he had lined up a friend in New York with whom he could stay during his layover in the United States. So I think the record is a little ambiguous on this point. But, of course, the larger issue is that, of course, immigration officials don't need to take aliens at their word that they're going to walk down the concourse to a different gate and board a new flight to Canada. Obviously, nothing would prevent them from walking out into the United States. So that's the reason why we're conducting these interviews and why we're entitled to ask him about his intentions and ask him if he's seeking asylum.
Where has he been the last 6 years?
I know that he's been detained for at least some portion of it. Of course, he has turned 18 during the pendency of this case, and I think initially
he was 16 when he arrived here in 02. And
that's right, 17 when he testified, and so now I think he's 21. But I believe he has been detained, although my understanding is that it's at a facility that is geared towards youthful aliens. At least that's where his initial detention occurred. I don't know as of today whether he's still detained in that facility. But typically, if we have a juvenile alien, they're placed in separate family homes or other facilities. They're not confined with the general adult population. But again, I don't know where he is as of this day today. In any event, we submit that the IJ's conclusions in this case could be upheld either on the grounds of adverse credibility or on the ground that the petitioner failed to satisfy his burden of proof. In the latter regard, the IJ noted two flaws in the petitioner's proof. One is that the petitioner failed to prove that the government of Pakistan or that his village government was unable or unwilling to protect him from his alleged persecutors. I think the IJ's determination in that respect is easily supported by substantial evidence. In fact, the only evidence that the petitioner has that his government was unable or unwilling to protect him is a remark ostensibly made by one of his attackers to the effect of, filing the police reports won't do you any good. That is the sum of the petitioner's evidence in this case, and I certainly don't think that that evidence compels the conclusion that the petitioner wishes this court to draw. The second basis for the IJ's determination that the petitioner failed to carry his burden of proof is that the petitioner failed to establish that he was persecuted on a protected ground. As the court noted in prior questioning, to this day, members of petitioner's close family, including his mother, his father, his grandfather, who was the individual whose conduct allegedly began this feud in the village, all to this day remain in that village in Pakistan unharmed. In the Zaidi case, this court recognized that that is a highly relevant factor to establishing the existence of a well-founded fear of future persecution, and certainly the IJ's conclusion in that respect is plainly supported by substantial evidence. Unless there are further questions from the panel, I will cede the balance of my time.
Okay, thank you very, very much, Mr. Dupree. Mr. Ha or Ms. Sabota? Okay.
Maybe you could tell us where he's been.
I can do that, actually. He is currently living and working with a proper documentation in Bristol, Connecticut, for the past couple of months or years, I believe.
Months or years?
I believe about a year he's been out there. Before that, he was in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
He hasn't been in custody then?
He has not been in custody, no. He was in custody for a period of years in Chicago area, then he moved to Grand Rapids and then on to Bristol, Connecticut. I just want to make two very quick points for the court. First of all,
How does that work? Is he paroled into the country then? Or what?
I'm not exactly sure of how the procedure of that works, Your Honor. I know that he has proper documentation from the Homeland Security Department at this point, and he's currently working with proper authorization in Bristol, Connecticut. Two very quick points for the court. First of all, the government stated that in his airport interview, the petitioner testified that he had someone lined up in New York for him to live with and stay with. That's not actually correct. On page 285 of the administrative record, he does mention that he has a cousin in New York, but the cousin doesn't know that he's coming. Secondly, the government stressed the Pakistani government's unwillingness or unableness to protect the petitioner from persecution, noting that the Shia Chadas may or may not have nationwide control over the police. There is evidence in the country condition reports, as well as the petitioner's testimony, that the Chadas do, in fact, have control over police and the government and have powerful connections throughout the country. The IJ also sort of failed to recognize the feudalism evidence in the record that these types of families do have power nationwide. I see that my time has expired.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Sabota and Mr. Ha, and we thank also Mr. Dupree. Next.